97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the incredible rise in popularity of esports. Our guest, Mark Nagel, professor of sport and entertainment at the University of South Carolina. All right, so Mark, typically on our Sports Focus shows, I have a little bit of knowledge about the topic that we're talking about. I have to admit to almost no knowledge of esports. So correct me where I'm wrong. Is this people playing video games against other people and or watching other people play video games against each other?
Well, I think there's a little of all of the above. I think when most people, particularly people who are over 40 years of age, think of video games, they think of Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and kind of those man versus the machine games that were very, very popular in the 1980s, that many of which became, you know, video games that you played at home on Atari or Nintendo or so forth. And there are still some of that aspects. But when we talk about esports, what we're really talking about now is a mushrooming industry that's just exploded over the last 5 years, and that involves video games where teams, in most cases, teams of five, are playing against another team of five. And these are big revenue opportunities because, amazingly, here as it is for some people to consider, many of these video game tournaments in video games like League of Legends or Counter-Strike Global Offensive or Defense of the Ancients, you know, they will actually be in arenas, and those arenas will have 12,000, 15,000, 18,000 fans that will pay to come watch these two teams of five compete against each other. And on the big screen, you actually see the video game taking place that these 10 people are participating in. So it is an amazing transformation from what most people think of the video game industry from just, you know, 8 to 10 years ago.
All right. So you're going to have to drag me into this decade, I guess, when it comes to this kind of thing. So we don't have Angry Birds tournaments, right?
Not really. I mean, there still are people that keep track of certain records in what might be called individualized games. So there are still, you know, world records in things like Donkey Kong or in things like, you know, video games that people are playing today. But for the most part, when we're talking about esports, we're talking about team-based games where the players actually, in most cases, become very much like a professionalized team, and yet they practice together, they work together, they prepare, and then they go and they play in tournaments with their colleagues. And in some cases, they actually have retained coaches who coach them on how to play. So it tends to be more of these team-based games than the individual games that we might play on our home computer or on our cell phone when we're waiting for something.
Okay, so in times past, people have questioned whether billiards is a sport, whether auto racing is a sport. Is esports sports?
Well, I think it depends on your definition. I'm sure there are some old school people that would adamantly oppose the idea of comparing that to basketball, football, or any other physical, traditional sport that involves physical exertion. But if you go onto ESPN's website, they have an entire section devoted to esports, just the same way they have an entire section devoted to the NFL, college football, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and so forth. So I think in the minds of most people that are broadcasting and organizing sporting events, they definitely have classified this as a sport from that perspective.
Okay, so you teach sport and entertainment. I'm one who would say this, what we're talking about, is more entertainment than it is sport, because sport involves athletes. Can you really call the participants in esports athletes?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to your definition of an athlete. You know, some people would say, as you mentioned, you know, auto racing, those aren't actually athletes. But then you look at what happens to their heart rate when they're driving for 3.5 hours straight. You know, what type of physical stamina do they have to have? There are a number of people who have made the argument that video game players are involved in activities when they're playing, concentration level, heart rate, lung capacity, and so forth, that mimic other athletic sports. I don't tend to worry so much about what we call it. When we talk about here at South Carolina, our sport and entertainment management program, we talk about anything that involves a ticketed event. So whether it's a basketball game or a circus show or a monster jam, whatever it is, if we're selling tickets and there's fans that want to come and participate and watch and pay money, we try to teach it. And so we're actually, last semester, I taught a course in esports, or the business of esports, because there's no doubt for some of these video games and some of these teams, it has become big, big business with live television, selling tickets, sponsorships, and everything else that we would associate with the NBA, the NFL, or so forth.
Yeah, I was just thinking about valid comparisons, and for some reason, Cirque du Soleil popped into my head. It's like you wouldn't really think of those people as athletes, but boy, they are definitely athletic.
And I think the thing that a lot of fans like, and we're just now starting to learn a little bit more about who are these fans and what do they want, but some of the initial studies indicate that the fans like the fact that there are two things. One, there's a competition. So unlike Cirque du Soleil or professional wrestling or other things that involve physical exertion that are not necessarily competitive sport, esports is competitive. And they also like the fact that you don't have to be 6'10", run a 4.4, 40-yard dash or some of the other physical attributes that some of the skills involved in playing video games, anybody can play video games. And so I think there's a lot of people that like the competitive aspect and the access that they can actually participate in some of these things. And many of the esports top players are just normal people that don't have unusually distinct physical characteristics.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Mark Nagel of the University of South Carolina about esports. Mark, final question on this. Is it a sport? Are they athletes? Line of questioning. Thinking as a defender, trying to think as a defender of this, there is definitely hand-eye coordination that comes into play here.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a process, and I think from the team element as well, there's a huge amount of coordination when you watch, or more accurately, when you listen to what the participants are saying to one another in the high-level match. And I think it's interesting when someone such as a Rick Fox, who has actually bought one of the highly competitive teams, when he's been interviewed and people have kind of scoffed and said, hey, you were an NBA basketball player and a great college basketball player and all these other things, and now you're involved in a sport that doesn't involve athletes, and he's always immediately turns the tables on them and say, no, these players are actually athletes. They are involved and, they have to use certain physical attributes at a high level in order to compete successfully. So I think there's a number of people that are looking at it, at the different things you have to be able to do to compete at the world-class level.
Okay, let me refer to an article about esports as being massive and growing. And the first part of the title is Resistance is Futile, which, of course, for guys like me, bring back the Borg in Star Trek, The Next Generation. And it's like, resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. I don't think I want to be assimilated into this.
Well, and I don't think that's what esports is. The people that are running some of these different tournaments and are setting up some of these leagues, I think that's kind of a overblown headline that you were reading from that particular article.
They all tend to be, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what the media is all about, is to get eyeballs to pay attention. But I think the underlying idea with that is to understand that this is not going away. This is not some thing that's got a really, really small impact and only a few thousand people are participating and consuming the content in this. I think this is a multi-million dollar business already, and it's growing incredibly fast. And I think it's also an international phenomenon. Places like Korea and other countries in Europe, where esports athletes are recognized the same way that in the United States some of our most popular football and basketball and baseball players are recognized. So it's definitely becoming more and more part of the culture in different countries, and I think it's going to continue to grow here especially.
All right. Making reference to this same article, the writer talks about what the typical mindset of, what comes to your mind when you're thinking of people playing video games, and they're headset-wearing, energy-drink-guzzling gamers. Is that accurate, or are most of us wrong in our, based on what you just said, you know, about especially in Korea, that would not be the picture that you would paint?
No, I think that's changing a lot. I think when you look at what's happened, and it's interesting talking to people who are involved in esports, one of the things they're already starting to think about is many of the players have started to utilize studies of workout routines, sleep patterns, you know, looking at how can they hone their body to be more effective. And even though you say, oh, well, they're just punching buttons and looking at a screen, you know, everything in the human body is interconnected. And so there's a number of esports teams now that are putting their athletes or their players on workout regimens and watching their diet. And I think the other thing that's going to be interesting is looking at now performance-enhancing drugs may start to seep into this, because if you can get your attention level to be more honed, that may give you an advantage. So I think a number of the same issues that we've had in other sports are going to start to creep up in esports, even though a lot of people just think of it as, oh, someone sitting in their basement, you know, guzzling a drink or whatever else and doing this part-time. And this is a full-time endeavor for a lot of the athletes, and they have coaches, they have trainers, and they have support staffs around them to help them to play better.
All right, so a couple of facts and numbers out of this article that kind of blew my mind. Midweek live streams routinely attract more than 100,000 online viewers, and big sponsors like, well, you would expect Red Bull, but Coke, Nissan. I mean, this is big business.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's fascinating about the revenue model is many of the athletes actually make more money by doing their live stream of their practicing during the week or out of the times when there isn't competition than they do in some of the competitive tournaments that they enter. So there may be prize money, and I think it mimics very much what happens a lot of times with, you know, prominent basketball players. Michael Jordan and LeBron James made millions and millions of dollars, you know, playing for their team, but they made even more money by working for Nike in the off season or by working for Nike doing commercials and publicity. So I think the same thing has happened in esports, where some of the best players actually make more money by live streaming their practice sessions than they do when they actually compete for prize money.
Now, let me get this right. People watch their practice sessions?
Absolutely. And it's funny because a number of people in the esports industry have asked, well, why wouldn't some of these other teams in the, for lack of a better term, the more traditional sports allow this? People want to watch and see, okay, how does a certain player, how does Faker, who's one of the best participants, how does he go about practicing? What does he say? Because many times when they're practicing, they actually do discussions about, well, here's what I was thinking when I was trying to do this, and here's the move I was making, or here's what my teammate and I were trying to accomplish as we made this move. And so a number of people in the esports world have said, well, why wouldn't you want to actually expose people to your practice sessions? Because people would love to see, what does James Harden do to practice his three-point shot, or what does some of these other players do? So it's an interesting look at a different, similar model, but also a little bit different in how esports athletes go about generating revenue.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Mark Nagel at the University of South Carolina about esports and how popular that has become. Again, another stat here that kind of blew my mind. In 2014, 205 million people watched or participated in esports. That's a lot of folks.
Oh, absolutely. And when you know, your listeners can just look at this and you look at what the Staples Center sold out in, I think, 15 minutes for one of the League of Legends championships matches a couple years ago. They had 40,000 people that showed up in Seoul, South Korea to watch in the Olympic Stadium, not the arena, but the Olympic Stadium, you know, where track and field was held. And so, you know, some of these tournaments and some of these events are drawing numbers that not only compare but eclipse NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball attendance figures. So it's an interesting look at what the present right now is really amazing, and what could the future hold as this becomes more and more popular.
Yeah, getting away from the mindset of 22-year-old jobless guys in mom's basement, you know, about the only one of those that actually applies is young. Because women participate in this, people who are full-time, I guess maybe they watch some of these practice sessions while they're at work, but that's a different story. So, yes, they're young, but that's about the only description that fits.
Yeah, I think the world-class participants, it's very similar to other sports. When you become 28, 29, 30 years old, your skills start to erode at the world-class level. So very, very similar that most, 17, 18, 19 to 24, 25 is kind of your peak years. So you have, you know, those level of ages of the highest level participants. But from a consumption standpoint, it's amazing. You have little kids that go and watch these matches and watch online, and you have adults and you have senior citizens. I mean, the attractiveness for the fan and the demographics of the fans, even though there are disproportionately young people following this, it covers all demographics when you talk about who's watching and consuming esports competitions.
All right. So again, let me quote from this article. Gaming is what every traditional sports league is desperate to become: young, global, digital, and increasingly diverse. So should the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball learn from esports?
Well, I think there's elements that they can learn from. And in fact, if you look at the roster, you can actually just Google NBA owners buying esports teams or something similar. There's been a number of owners of NBA teams, as well as owners of other professional sports teams, who have invested in teams and invested in the business of esports. And I think in many cases, what many of those owners are looking at is controlling the arenas, and oftentimes the arena business goes dark, you know, once the hockey and basketball season's over. And so can we actually be involved in esports and have events over the summer that will put 15,000 people in an arena? So there's starting to be a merge, I think, already with the Philadelphia 76ers, and a number of other teams have actually made the plunge and have bought elements of teams or entire teams in the esports realm.
And the numbers would certainly lead you to decide to do that. In 2014, 3.7 billion, with a B, billion hours worldwide watching esports.
Absolutely. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. It breaks down cultural barriers. And you know, these international competitions are very similar in, not necessarily format to the Olympics, but very similar in the fact that they bring people from a variety of different countries together. And so when you talk about sports that are truly worldwide, basketball is becoming more and more worldwide. Soccer is obviously the number one worldwide sport, and cricket's very much worldwide in certain parts of the world. But, you know, esports in many ways might have a higher ceiling than some of these other sports that are still very regional, whether they be focused mostly in Europe or, like with American football, that's focused mostly in North America. Esports is a universal sport that's played on every continent and nearly every country, and it's an amazing thing to watch what's happened to it.
Okay, so I want you to address the old curmudgeon in me, which says, this is just another example of young people with their heads buried in their devices all day long, detached from the real world. This is what's wrong with the world. So talk me out of that.
Well, I think anything that you could do can become a vice. There are people that are buried all day long right now that are reading up everything they can about what's going to happen in the NFL playoffs. So I think it's just another thing that's come along that's very, very popular. I think the popularity is going to continue to grow. And, you know, my answer is always, you know, if you don't like something, just don't watch it. And I think that's what a lot of people in esports have said, and a lot of people that are investing in esports have said that, yeah, there may be some people that are not going to be interested in this or think that this is just a waste of time, but we're not forcing them to watch it. There's millions and millions of people that do want to participate and do want to watch some of these competitions. And so why not set it up and make as much money as you can by setting up the sport in a way that makes sense for everybody involved?
All right. In the final about 40 seconds that we have left, I want you to comment on, and our listeners to think about this fact. There are more YouTube followers of esports than news, movies, and education combined.
I think that tells you a lot about where it is right now. And I think when you start to think about the growth rate and what's been happening recently, if that continues to sustain itself, or even if it just slows down a little bit, you're going to have esports and esports athletes and paying attention to esports is going to be all over the world, and it's going to be very much a part of the fabric of our sport and entertainment culture.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Mark Nagel. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.